How do you feel about me opening the podcast this week with just like the sound of unpleasant panting?
Do I have any choice?
It's really hot here. I can barely think straight. If you're listening in Europe, I hope you're managing to stay relatively cool. I'm finding basic tasks quite challenging today, so apologies, listeners, if we're even less articulate than usual.
45 degrees it was yesterday.
Paris is a mild 35, but yeah, it's been bad. And actually, I did something bad that was heatwave related this week.
What?
Well, we had a spare fan at home. So like the terrible person I am, I put it on this website, Le Bon Coin, which is kind of like France's answer to Craigslist. You can just like sell stuff to strangers. So I posted an ad, like secondhand fan available, €20. And within 10 minutes, I had literally a dozen replies from desperate Parisians saying like, please, can I buy your fan? I'll drive all the way across Paris for it. I need it. Give it to me. So I have personally profited from the heat wave and I feel bad about it. And I'm sorry.
You're a capitalistic monster, Katie.
I know. By the way, while I'm apologizing for things, I also feel really bad because I made a mistake on the podcast last week and I accidentally called the Lithuanian president, Dalia Grybauskaitė, the Latvian president, and some of our sharp-eared Lithuanian listeners pointed it out. And thank you for doing that. It really was just a slip of the tongue, but I'm definitely not the first person to make that mistake. And I know that Lithuanians find it very annoying.
You did even have it written right in your notes, didn't you?
I did. It's so annoying. I was concentrating so hard on saying Grybauskaitė that I got the first bit wrong. So I'm very sorry, everyone. But anyway, how are you? What's been going on in Amsterdam?
I'm fine. After last week having no news to report, this week I've got some very exciting news that I did a performance in a toilet yesterday.
Oh, who for?
That's how good things are going for me. For all the young patrons of the National Opera here, I was giving them some exciting pop-up opera experience up close and personal in the women's toilet. Some of them were a bit shocked.
How did this work in staging terms? Was it like a little camera or a hole? This little glory hole?
Oh, no, it was... I didn't go into the cubicles to perform for them.
Oh.
I sang around the sink and the mirror. It turns out the women's toilets at the National Opera are palatial and the men's toilets are just like a cupboard. So I did it in the women's toilets.
Sorry, why was it in the toilets?
Because... they were there to see a gala on the stage and the director thought it would be fun if... as soon as they came into the space, they started being like attacked by opera.
I certainly feel attacked by opera. So that sounds fun.
It was.
Interesting acoustics in bathrooms as well.
Yeah, it was quite forgiving.
But moving on from toilets, what's happening on the podcast this week?
This week we're going to be speaking to Johnny Pitts, who's a writer, photographer and presenter, who's just published a great book called Afropean: Notes from Black Europe. It is the result of 5 months of travelling around Europe, meeting Black Europeans, exploring Black communities and exploring his own identity as a British man of mixed heritage. We'll be talking to Johnny about his travels and what he learned about himself and this continent.
But first... who's it been a good week for, Dominic?
Well, we keep giving good week to Justice recently, which I guess is no bad thing, but it does feel a bit trite, and that's not going to stop me, though. It's been a good week for Justice in the Netherlands specifically, and for Salo Muller, an 83-year-old Dutch man who has been campaigning for the Dutch rail service, the Nederlandse Spoorwegen, or NS, to compensate Holocaust victims financially for the train service's involvement in the transportation of Jewish people to concentration camps during the Second World War. NS first apologised for the company's actions back in 2005, but this week agreed to pay out to victims and their families. The Dutch railways received the equivalent of about €2.2 million from the Nazis during the war in order to transport over 100,000 Jews to concentration camps. Salo Muller's parents were two of those who were taken away when Salo was only aged 5. He wrote an autobiographical book a few years ago entitled See You Tonight and Promise to Be a Good Boy, which are the harrowing final words that his mother said to him before she was taken away. First to the Dutch camp of Westerbork and then on to Auschwitz, where she was gassed. Salo has had an interesting life and actually went on to become a bit famous for being the physiotherapist for Ajax. That's a football team, Katie.
I knew that.
Sure. And he's been campaigning fiercely with the help of the human rights lawyer, Lisbeth Zegveld. They had been threatening legal action if an offer wasn't made. And fortunately, the NS came to the decision to offer money to the victims and their descendants. Survivors will receive 15,000 euros each, widows or widowers 7,500, and children of the victims will receive either 5,000 or 7,500.
Which doesn't seem like a huge amount of money.
No, and NS said they've really struggled to grapple with how much money is appropriate, and actually everyone acknowledges that no amount of money is appropriate, no amount of money is enough.
Yeah.
And Salo spoke to a Dutch website called Nu.nl after the announcement, emphasizing that, like, whilst he's pleased about the decision, this is not a day to celebrate. No amount of money would be sufficient. And he said, the money is given to people who experienced terrible suffering in the war. This is only a plaster on the wound. If you lost your father and mother in the war, you now get paid an amount. That money is nice, but it doesn't ease the pain. So perhaps we shouldn't have put this in Good Week, because that makes it sound like it's, oh, everything's fine now, which obviously it's not.
But it is, I think, better than doing nothing.
That's true. And it's a similar move to what the French operator SNCF did in 2014 for the same reasons. They were also involved with helping the Nazis transport Jews to camps.
The French one is kind of interesting because actually it was only American victims, or like the descendants of American victims, that got compensated, because this compensation fund was set up for kind of like slightly gross commercial reasons. Basically, at the time, the French government was hoping to win contracts to run trains in Maryland in America. So they set up this fund to give compensation to American victims and their descendants who'd been transported. French victims and other nationalities haven't got anything like that.
Oh, wow. That's really cynical.
But maybe the decision from the Dutch will encourage them to reassess. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I also thought it's interesting in the context of the discussion that's going on a lot in the Democratic primary debate in America. I'm sure our American listeners will have been hearing about the discussion about whether there should be reparations for descendants of enslaved men and women mm-hmm. in America. So it seems like this is internationally a topic of conversation. And I think it's really good progress that the NS have done something about it.
I think so too.
Who's it been a bad week for, Katie?
It wasn't a great week for Angela Merkel. We actually thought twice about putting this on the podcast, because when I first saw this video of her that people have been talking about a lot this week, this video of her hands shaking uncontrollably while she was on stage during a public event, apparently due to some kind of tremor, my first thought was, this is just horribly sad and I just feel really bad for her. And it is weird to see Merkel looking so vulnerable. We're used to just seeing her being such a strong woman. And then I thought, should we even be talking about this? Here is a woman with some kind of health issue. It could be literally anything. It might not be anything serious at all. And maybe talking about it is just gossiping, really. On the other hand, Merkel is the most powerful leader in Europe. She has been running Germany for nearly half of my lifetime. So if she has potentially a major health issue, that is a public issue. So I don't know. I found it really interesting as a journalist, the difference between how most German media decided to talk about it and how international outlets talked about it. So the German media have been incredibly restrained about it in a way that you would never see if this was, I don't know, like an American president or a British prime minister struggling with some kind of health problem like this. It would just be all over the front pages. And in Germany, I think Bild ran it on the front page, but most other media just ran a short report about it. It was quite low down in the news bulletins. It was just very low key in what I think was quite an admirable way. Germany is obviously a super privacy conscious country, partly because it has such a traumatic history of like mass surveillance. But internationally, the media aren't really burdened down by that concern. And it was talked about widely. So this was the second time in just a couple of weeks that she'd had one of these tremors in public. And the last time, the New York Times, it has emerged, decided not to write about it. Merkel said she was just dehydrated and she'd had too much coffee and it was nothing to worry about. But it happening again so quickly afterwards, it didn't feel like a coincidence. It felt like a major world leader having a health issue in public. And the way that they've talked about in the international press, it's kind of reminded me of the way in Britain that, you know, when the Queen has a cold,
yeah,
it's on the news. Like, it's something we should all be concerned by. Like, the Queen has a cold today. And I guess, you know, the Queen is an old lady and the British media are always looking out for signs that she might be about to depart. But Merkel, you know, she's a lot younger. She's 64. But similarly, it felt like something that people were interested in because it was this reminder that it might feel like she's been here forever, but she's not going to be here forever. We're already looking in Germany and in Europe towards this new era that doesn't have her in it. She said that she's going to step down in 2021 after what will have been an incredibly tiring and stressful 16 years in power. After all of those nights with no sleep trying to save the euro, it's amazing that she hasn't had more health issues. She's always been very robust, at least as far as we know. So, I don't know, I have a lot of feelings about this video of Merkel, and they're a little bit contradictory. So I think all I will say for now is gute Besserung, Angela Merkel, get well soon, and take some time off this weekend, you know, like go and listen to a podcast or something.
Oh, you're talking from a point of privilege, able to take time off.
I know I am, aren't I?
Yeah, it was horrible to watch those videos. I mean, I also didn't even know whether to watch them, but I did.
Yeah.
Let's not dwell on that. Let's stop gossiping and talk to Johnny.
Let's. Identity, Dominic. It's complicated, isn't it?
It sure is, yeah. It's one of the reasons why we started this podcast.
It is. And I don't like asking you to put labels on things, but for the sake of this conversation we're about to have, what would you say if I asked you, like, where you're from?
I'd say I'm from Britain. Actually, you know, I say to people I'm from London.
Do you?
Which is probably a really arsey thing to say.
Well, I don't know. It's true. And you'd have to apologise less than saying you're British, which is what I usually do at the moment when I apologise to French people.
Where do you say you're from?
Yeah, I don't know. I usually say that I'm British, but I live in Paris. And then when people do, as they often do, that thing when they sort of wave vaguely at my face and they're like, no, but where are you really from? Or like, what are your origins?
Oh God, are people still asking that?
Well, it's usually in a more delicate way now. So like, what's your background? What are your origins? Which I don't really mind. Some people get really bugged by it. I just say that my family or half of my family are from Vietnam. But it is awkward having to have like multiple identities, especially when you add in a European dimension, which I do obviously from time to time, especially since we started making this podcast and started thinking a lot more about what it means to be European. But for me, these are kind of separate segments of who I am. And our guest this week, Johnny Pitts, has taken a slightly different approach to things. His book, Afropean, is kind of a quest for an identity that spans the continent and deals with a couple of these identities at once, which is pretty cool. What does it mean to be black in Europe? Can you build a community around that?
Can I just say, Katie, before we speak to Johnny, in our first ever conversation, I think one of the first sentences you ever spoke to me, you pronounced that you were Eurasian. That was your identity.
Because Eurasian to me means like half Asian, half European.
Mm.
It doesn't mean like I'm Asian of any kind living in Europe.
Okay.
I was going to ask Johnny about this because like it would be interesting to find a sort of European Asian identity, but we'd have to find a new word for it.
Let's see if he has a good answer.
Let's.
It's not his responsibility to come up with an answer for that.
I'm really curious, first of all, as to like, when did it first occur to you to even explore this idea of being Afropean in the first place? Because I was just chatting to Dominic about this, and like you, I am mixed race, so I juggle a couple of different identities. But until now, I have to confess, I've never really thought much about what the idea is to be an Asian European. Maybe, I guess, because annoyingly, the word Eurasian has already been taken and has like other meanings. When did you first start thinking about what it means to be Afropean?
I suppose I'm part of what you might describe as the new Labour generation, you know, unfortunately in some ways. But I feel like what was happening during the 90s is Britain seemed to be getting closer and closer to Europe. I felt that I was part of a generation who were taking part in the notion of what it meant to be a European. And I felt very relieved, actually, that because I don't like this idea of someone with brown skin of being sort of marooned on this little island that's spiritually and physically adrift from mainland Europe. I like this idea of being a part of something bigger. I didn't just want to be British. I wanted to be European. And then with black communities, I felt that like black communities have always had an issue with the nation state. And so it made sense to me to build a sort of trans-local network that sort of moved beyond the nation state, but were held together by this notion of Europe. And I think it was important to look at Europe rather than, say, America, because of this history of colonialism. And there are so many shared histories amongst black communities and some of the same kind of prejudices. And it was just underexplored. It always amazed me how Britain, and especially black Brits, would always look to America for inspiration. My dad's African-American, and there's, you know, I take inspiration from there too. But I feel like the problem with importing the political language from America is that you import some of the issues that aren't necessarily your own in Europe. But whereas European countries has a very similar way of subjugating and oppressing black communities. So it seemed to me an obvious place to search for a kind of a shared story and a support base.
And where did you first hear about this word, Afropean?
Well, I am a former music journalist, and it came to me through music, you know, the heart of that kind of world music boom in the 90s. David Byrne was on tour in Europe with the Talking Heads, and he was really surprised about what he saw in Europe. He describes it as a kind of reverse colonization. There were black people, basically, in Europe, and he wasn't expecting it. And he signed a Belgian Congolese artist called Marie Dawn, who goes by the name of Zap Mama, who is Belgian Congolese, and grappling with this liminal space of feeling of and not of Europe, of being between Africa and Europe. And her music is beautiful, and her first album is called Adventures in Afropia, and that's where you hear the word coming up for the first time, in about 1991, I think it was. And for me, I thought it was really interesting that David Byrne wasn't expecting to see black people in Europe. And I think with America, to go back to America again, it exports its blackness as part of the package, whereas Europe kind of doesn't. I think it really is a surprise when people go to somewhere like Sweden or Holland and they're confronted with a black community. So I wanted to put these spaces on the map, and Afropean was a sort of useful heuristic or I guess, portal into exploring this liminal space.
So you went on this trip. I think you spent 5 months traveling around the continent.
Yeah, 5 months.
And did you know what you were looking for when you set out?
I thought I knew what I was looking for. I thought I was looking for this very solid monolithic idea of what it meant to be black European. And then, of course, it never fit together, really. The itinerary is very loose. I should mention at this point that a lot of it was sort of powered by a community. In 2010, I set up my Afropean website. Well, actually, it was a Facebook page to start off with. And then it turned into a website and thousands of subscribers. And they all gave me sort of knowledge about where to go and who to see. And then put me in touch with contacts. And I was traveling on a real budget as well. So sometimes they'd put me in touch with people I could stay with. And so I would end up going to sort of these places in the center of a city. And then the community there was there, actually, we only like shop here, or this is only where we pass through, or this is like our marketplace. But where we live, it was very often on the periphery. So in lots of ways, this book became a tour of the sort of Europe's peripheries. And it was less about the cities I visited. Everybody will recognize Paris, Moscow, wherever. But for me, I visit sort of underexplored spaces in those familiar cities. And that's what the book's really about.
So David Byrne was surprised when he visited Europe in the 90s. How surprised were you with what you found in these black communities?
I was very surprised and relieved, to be honest. I think we're living in an era where it's all sort of quite polemical and sensational. And what I found was humanity and imperfection amongst black communities, which I think is really important. This book can't really be used for political purposes, particularly. It's a human story. And, you know, I met Tunisians in Sweden who had a real problem with Somalians. I met Cape Verdeans who had a problem with Angolans. And not that that's something to be celebrated, but it was just like I kind of told the story, and I told of how black Europe is this sort of moving idea, this fluid idea, but there are potential solidarities. And what I could do with this book is I could, through the narrative, allow each of these sort of black communities to talk to each other, even if they weren't talking to each other in reality. So, you know, this notion of the Afropean, it never really fit together, but in the end, I felt like that was the point of the book. It was sort of a happy failure in some ways.
So you feel like it's still something that is very much under construction, this idea of what it means to be Afropean?
Yeah, and you know, I don't walk around telling people that I'm Afropean. It's not this kind of space that is solid and that has to be imposed and you're in or you're out. It's just a word that resonated. It was a word that made me feel whole and unhyphenated. And it resonated with other people too. And you know, I think of the sociologist Paul Gilroy, who comes up with this term, this concept of the Black Atlantic, where he thinks black communities should invert the map and look at the space between nations and continents, the Atlantic Ocean, and look for a possible identity there for a few reasons. One, it transcends the nation state, which is a history of subjugating Black communities. And two, there's a lot of, obviously, history in that space, whether you're talking about the Middle Passage or you're talking about sailors who would get a job as a sailor because of, you know, to get away from the nation again. And then, you know, three, because a body of water suggests fluidity. So it's, you know, instead of saying I'm from this piece of land and it's unmovable, a body of water suggests that identity is something that's dynamic. And I think that really resonates with me. And I want Afropean to serve a kind of similar function in a way.
Yeah, it's cool. I was interested you mentioned this idea of not feeling hyphenated anymore. And for a lot of people that come from kind of mixed cultures like me, you know, I feel like I have several different separate identities. Is it helpful? Is it like comforting in some way to have this idea of like being Afropean is a way to kind of merge those identities and deal with them in one go?
Yeah, I think rather than on a personal level, I think culturally and politically, I just like the idea that it inserts the notion of being African into Europe as if people with African descent aren't going to be going anywhere anytime soon. And then it also addresses the fact that there are Black people here who feel European. You know, I talk in a European language. I've been educated in Europe. I take part in Europe. I care about Europe. I care about the future of Europe. I describe my relationship with Europe in the book as, I paraphrase Robert Frost here, but as a lover's quarrel. That's the kind of mood in the book, is wanting Europe to succeed and wanting the communities to get together and work. And I think Afropean just helps to sort of think about it that way, you know. On a personal level, I just, it sounds pretty to me. I've grown up having to tick, you know, Black other as my race on forms or whatever. And for me, Afropean is just something that is slightly more elegant and less clumsy than Black other or mixed race. You know, mixed race is problematic because it suggests that I'm from two pure races where race is a construct. You know, who knows where my dad's heritage is from? You know, the members of my dad's family, my dad's what you would describe as Black, but the members of my dad's family who have blue eyes, and you know, my mom's family, you know, there'd be a word that would be used for certain members of my mom's family back in the day that would be called swarthy. And so I mean, who knows where they're from? You know, I'm not from two pure distinct races, so mixed race is problematic as well. Afropean, I like it because it kind of doesn't talk about race, it talks about culture, and it suggests a unison between these two ideas of Africa and Europe.
I was a bit of a Zap Mama fan growing up, so I'm just interested to hear that. I didn't realise that she came up with this term. Did you ever get to meet her and speak to her about it?
I did. I was very lucky to meet Marie, and she's been very supportive, actually. She was saying a similar thing to me in lots of ways. She noticed that to be African-American was something, and it was the space that Black communities in America could anchor themselves to. And she realized as well that people, when they'd go to Belgium, say, they'd be surprised that there were Black people there. So she wanted to kind of make a map. She wanted to suggest that they, you know, to build a term that could hold in this otherness in Europe. And I think what's great about Zap Mama's music is that she transmit the notion of Afropean without saying anything. Sometimes it's in the music, you hear it in the fusion. And I think we do live in a time where people have to find creative and sometimes maybe even abstract ways to suggest how we can bring people together, and Zap Mama does that very eloquently.
You met her in Brussels, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I don't know how much you engage with like the institutions of the EU while you were there, but I've always been struck by their kind of extreme whiteness. And I was just wondering if it was something that you deal with at all in the book, or like something that bothers you, or if it's really not, you know, this quest is more about culture. So the politics of the EU and like the way that the institutions look doesn't really bother you that much.
No, I didn't get into that. And I've been in the European Parliament before. We get invited, Afropean gets invited. And you're right, it's very white. And but I didn't touch that in the book simply because I wanted this to be a book that explored Europe from the sort of street level. I wanted to put all my attention not on the people in Parliament, but rather the cleaner on the street, the people who are usually invisible.
If you like the sound of what Johnny's talking about, then go and get his book, Afropean Notes from Black Europe. It should be in any good bookstore, as they always say on these shows. What about bad bookstores? Some of them are bad too.
It's probably also in bad bookshops. Why not go there too? Spread the love.
Hey,
Katie, you might think I'm working for police lobbyists because I've got another story of police going beyond the call of duty as the happy ending.
Hang on, what was your last one?
About the policeman taking the French teenager to his baccalaureate, even though he crashed into him.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I've got amnesia due to the heat.
Yeah, apparently.
Carry on, what's this new one?
Okay, well, this one, I feel a bit bad about calling it a happy ending because the protagonist at the centre of it is by no means at her end yet, despite the fact that she is 93, and according to some tweets from her granddaughter, she is starting to think about what she can tick off on her bucket list before she reaches her end. Josie Birds is a 93-year-old resident in the Greater Manchester area, and her granddaughter Pam did something very nice and surprised her with one of her bucket list wishes: to be arrested by the police.
Yes!
Yes. Now, apparently Josie has been very well behaved all her life, or so she says. So she hadn't had a run-in with the police, but really wanted to experience what it was like to be arrested. Pam informed the Greater Manchester Police of her grandmother's wish, and they kindly obliged, arriving at Josie's door and taking her away in handcuffs to the station to be processed.
Oh.
Pam posted some amazing photos of these events on her Twitter feed, which we will retweet. Head to @EuropeansPod. And Josie seems to be having a blast in one of the photos, and then in another of the photos, taking it very seriously. But anyway, cheers to Josie and Pam. Here's to fulfilling your dreams.
And here's to rebellious old ladies.
Or very well-behaved old ladies.
Or very well-behaved ladies for most of their life. I'm glad the police weren't too, didn't take the whole thing too seriously and like slam her head on the car door and stuff like that. It seems like it was done very gently.
Yeah.
As befits an old lady.
That's why I felt a bit bad, like doing another 2 weeks in a row giving good stories about the police, because I know there's another side of police behaviour. I shouldn't just paint them as like great do-gooders all the time.
But often, police do really nice things. That should be celebrated sometimes.
Yeah, they do some really good work.
Good job in these two cases.
Yes.
That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of the Europeans podcast. Despite the heat, maybe people are listening in sort of woodland glades and by swimming pools and nice cool places like that. Why not tell us where you are? In fact, you can reach out to us on a variety of social medias. What are they, Dominic?
They are Twitter @EuropeansPod, as I just said. Facebook, the Europeans podcast. You type that into the search bar. I think that's how Facebook works. Mm. And Instagram, Europeans podcast. You can also send us an email, europeanspodcast@gmail.com, as some people did when they pointed out Katie's mistake last week. So if we made any more mistakes, just email us.
But please be nice. A couple of the Lithuanians seemed very cross. And again, I'm really sorry, everyone. If you like the show and would like to throw a couple of pennies in the tip jar, you can do that at patreon.com/europeanspodcast, where our little fund is growing. And yeah, we're starting to think about merch. We'll see you next week, everyone.
I'm going to be in on holiday, so you're going to have to see if you can drag me off my sunbed.
I hope we can hear the gentle lapping of waves in the background. That'd be very relaxing.
I hope so too.
Have a good flight, Dominic.
Thanks.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.